Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for joining us today. It is time for another kick-ass career conversation. I am Kim.
I'm Louise.
And we're joined by
Dr. Katrina Mitchum. You can call me Katrina.
Yay. Katrina, we're glad that you're here. We're going to let the world know about you in just a little bit, but we want to start this week how we start every week. What are we celebrating today?
Again, I will say how much I love this opportunity to take the time to reflect. I say it every week. And that's for those folks who are just finding us, right? And they're like, who's Kim and Louise and what's this all about? Part of it is about celebrating. It's about taking that time to reflect and just appreciate, I think, some of the things that we bump over. I'm celebrating, I have this yoga teacher that I got connected with only a few weeks ago. I like to do those yoga classes that are in the community center that are done right by someone local who just loves what they do. This isn't their profession, but it's their passion. And the community run yoga classes, I find so much fun because there's like such a wide variety of folks that show up and everyone's there just like for their own reasons and no one's showing off. No one's in Lululemon or unless Lululemon wants to sponsor us. And then by all means, I will have a different take on that. But right. Like we're not all like there for like those kinds of reasons. And my yoga instructor went around with this wonderful little bag of intentions the other day, and we all got to pull a card out. And I had this beautiful little card, and I'll show it here. And it's, and I just love it. It's, I'm deeply fulfilled by all that I do. And I'm celebrating these like little small acts of kindness, I think, that happen randomly that just, I don't know, light up my day and just, it's that little change of course, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. I talk about pivots and we talk about pivots all the time. And sometimes that's all we need is this little random act of kindness and it pivots our day. And who knows where we go from there when we have these little moments. So I'm celebrating community run yoga classes all over the country and random acts of kindness.
Oh, I love it. So should we bring out the sweary affirmations then that you sent me? I mean, it might be a different flavor. I mean, we could share them.
That's how you should start every episode. Sweary right? affirmations.
Yeah.
Ooh, we could.
Katrina, what are you celebrating today?
Today I'm on like an extended celebration. So I have a book that was published 2 weeks ago now, but it's an academic book. And I don't know if you're familiar with the academic publishing process, but it's like years in the making. And so it was, you know, one of those things that I can finally, my copies, like my author copies just came on Friday. And so I get like the physical book and I got to flip through and my kids got excited to see like my picture in the back with my, you know, with my bio. And so it's just, it's nice to like, oh, it's on my shelf. It's a real thing that lives and breathes in this world.
Yeah. You birthed it.
I did.
It, really long gestation period.
Yes. Incredibly long, just too long. But yeah, so that's what I'm celebrating.
Yay. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. That's a huge celebration. Yeah. I love that. What am I celebrating other than my sweary affirmations, which I still celebrate every day? I love them. I know what I'm celebrating. I am celebrating open-mindedness. Details around that. So probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I was introduced to human design as a tool, as a way of kind of looking at ourselves in a more holistic way. Gives us a lot of details on things beyond a more traditional assessment. And I've been incorporating it more and more and more with my clients, with my groups that I'm working with. And at first it was like, you know, I'm okay doing this one-on-one, but in groups, this Like, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And I finally went headlong and I'm like, look, I can actually help you better if I have this information. And it has been not just my open-mindedness, but the open-mindedness of those who are in my circles, who I get to have these conversations, and they're asking really deep questions about themselves. And finding, I mean, I'm all about ease. They're finding more ease in being able to say, oh, that makes sense. I see that in my design now. I see that that's just who I am. Oh, how can I embrace that? How can I incorporate that more, right? Whatever that crunchy bit is that may show up in our lives, right? If you have the perfectionist channel, you don't always like having that channel. And yet there is so much joy and so much wisdom and so much brilliance that can come from those places that we once felt crunchy when we go, oh, that's just me. And so that, I think, open-mindedness is how I would say it, is just being open to that and creating a new understanding of who we are. So that's what I'm celebrating today. That and sweary affirmations, because these are freaking awesome. Katrina, before we go any further, I really want to let people know a little bit about who you are. Since you did just talk about this academic book that came out, I think it's important that people, right, get a sense. So Katrina has been designing and teaching online courses and trainings for 15 years, much longer, I will say, than most people have thought about taking online courses and trainings. I think people who thought this was new in 2020, surprise, it's not. And she's passionate about helping others create learning experiences that create impact for learners and businesses alike. Katrina, we're so excited that you're here and that we're going to have this conversation around learning and what it's like to be a learner. Yeah.
And so I want to start with again, just kind of that celebration of your academic, like, conglomeration of all of those years and being able to put that into a book and have that as an instrument to share your knowledge with folks. Tell me a little bit about what brought you here, not just what birthed your book, but what brought you here. Like, did you always think this would be a space that you would be passionate about? So passionate, in fact, that you spent years writing about it? Like, is this what you thought you'd be doing when you were a much younger you?
No. My career path has been kind of like maybe a tornado, where, like, as I am the tornado, spinning around, grabbing all the things that I'm interested in until I sort of just landed here. I was probably one of five English literature students in my bachelor's program that did not go into education. I left with just a degree in literature, and I got into publishing and document design. I learned Adobe. This was all after college. And I went back to get my master's degree in professional and technical writing because I was like, document design's a real job. It lives under technical writing. That's what I want to do. And then I took a class on teaching writing and was like, ooh, no, this is what I want to do. And then I got to treat, I taught, at the time they were calling it basic writing, but like a 4-credit class at the community college. And I got to teach it as an internship. And I loved it. I taught online my second semester, and there was no turning back. It was my favorite modality to teach in. And that was back in 2009. 2010, I went entirely online, and that's all she wrote.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about being open-minded. Right? Like, you stepped into these spaces and you went, this is what I like. Yeah, that's so cool. And it's funny because most people, when they talk about that tornado, or like Louise likes to describe it as like this crayon scribble of a career path, which mine definitely looks like. But the this idea of the tornado, I love the idea of like sucking in or soaking in those bits that it's like, ooh, I want more of this. And so it's growing and growing and growing. And so while some people maybe hear a tornado and they're like, wow, that does not sound appealing, I think it's amazing. So kudos to you for allowing that space to keep growing for yourself?
I can't say that it was necessarily that I was open-minded. Like, I don't want to take all that credit. Like, that might not be it. But I did tend to gravitate toward and follow paths of things I was interested in, right? Like, ooh, I love this concept, or I love this theory, or I love doing this thing. And then, you know, well, let's see where that takes me. But it was always following something that I valued and something I found important. Mm-hmm. So like with the online classes, community colleges are their own special context of students. But the students that are in community colleges and online, those are the students that had someone along the line fail them. Mm-hmm. And they're often coming for not just one or two. Like, it's not just because they want to stay home in their pajamas, especially back then. It's because they've had a lot of life happen and they really, really want to be there. And so that was, I think that's part of the reason why I gravitated toward it.
So what is the difference? Because I know everybody has an opinion on this now, because we went through this global pandemic, and those of us who were connected to the online learning space, either as, you know, a student ourselves or as a parent or as a teacher, what is it that you love about the online? Is it what you just spoke to, or is there something else about this online learning space that you love so much?
It's really, to me, about, I see it as a way to take down gates for people that have traditionally had gates put up. And whether that's in formal education or informal education, I have been, you know, since I got out, I call it out because I left a full-time position. Mm-hmm. I've taken a lot of online courses that are intended to help people do things, and a lot of them are really terrible. And they're just putting up more barriers because they've got fancy marketing. And it's not really, even if it's unintentional, the design isn't really going to help someone learn the way we know that adults learn. And I think that's it. It's about adult learning, as opposed to children learning, which there's a lot of overlap, but there's also a lot of differences. And I think that's kind of the thing that drove me into doing it formally, but also the thing that was like, well, I still really like this thing. And there's a space for it outside of higher education.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit to that difference of adult learning? Because right, what we're talking about here is really understanding how we learn. And I think it would be helpful for our listeners to have a deeper understanding of like, how do adults learn?
Yeah. It's messy and complicated.
Cool. Just like adults.
So just like adults, I like to think of it as like baggage, right? So we've all got our own experiential baggage tied to learning, whether that's formal or informal. And so, you know, the older we get, the more that baggage has been beat up, has had stickers put on it, has maybe been swapped out or is fraying. And all of those things impact how we come to a new learning experience, right? So we all, and that's the case in life in general, I think, but it's especially important if you're trying to teach someone how to do something new and understanding what potential experiences that they've had at that point. You don't want to treat an adult like they're a child, but you also want to be able to give them enough stepping stones mm-hmm. for them to decide which stepping stones they're going to use, and giving a lot more autonomy than we typically give to children.
Yeah. I found too, like understanding, like being in workshops, being a facilitator and a teacher, someone who delivers trainings and workshops, is to really, really understand that from a leadership point of view, mm-hmm. that folks in this space all come from different paths and they all have experiences, and building that trust, building that space of trust, becomes so important and so crucial. In one-on-one spaces, I find it a little bit easier because you have a little bit more interaction when you're face-to-face. How does that translate to online learning? Is it still that, is trust still that important when you're in that space?
Absolutely. You know, if you don't trust the person that is trying to teach you something, then you won't actually think that the information they're giving you is important enough to implement, right? And you can, like, I like to take reading as an example. Like, I can read all I want, but I'm not going to learn that from that reading unless I'm engaging with it. And I'm not going to engage with something or someone that I don't trust. I think that trust is maybe built a little bit differently in, you know, offering support and things like that. But absolutely, trust is critical in the classroom. And there's actually lots of studies. I'm going to go a little bit academic for a second. There's a lot of studies that show, especially in online learning, where we have studied these things, that one of the number one factors that impact whether or not a student, regardless of whether they're 18 or 65, stays in the class and continues past the class is actually their faculty member. And so the person that's doing the teaching, even if they didn't design it, that personal interaction is critical to somebody being successful by any definition of the word.
I mean, I go back to any of my learning days, but in particular my law school days, where I know that there were certain that I learned so much and thought that I was actually interested in certain parts of the law because I was so engaged because of the faculty member. And when I got out and I practiced in that area, I'm like, this sucks. But it was, right? I was totally engaged. I was totally into it. And I did well in those classes, but it was 100% the faculty member, 100%. And that's, I think that speaks volumes, particularly if we think about this in terms of outside of the classroom and the learning that we even do, right? When we are leading a team, when we're working with a team, when we're bringing on new hires, having that capacity to be engaging and build trust, it sounds like is, and it's been my experience, but from what you're sharing, that is the foundational component of ensuring that the person is going to learn, person or team is going to learn what you need them to learn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think two big ways that you do that are through transparency, right? What their path is going to be through the course or the training or the onboarding, like that shouldn't be a mystery. Right. They shouldn't have to say, well, why am I doing this now? How is that going to get me from point A to point Z with all of these steps in between? And then the second is value. So making sure that the person that's there to do the learning or the onboarding or whatever it is, knows the value of the things that are being presented to them or that they're being asked to do. And those, I think, go hand in hand. But I would say those are the two big things for, I think, creating that trust.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I have this bubbling, this itch that I need to scratch around learning and trainings, especially in the workplace. I talk to a lot of folks who have learned and trained up the wazoo. They have all kinds of certificates and accreditations, and they've gone back to school and they've done this, and this. And it feels like oftentimes folks are a little bit dissatisfied about what they're doing. And so they lean on education or a certificate to fill a void, to say, well, I'm only going to get to that next phase or that next step or that next place if I have the education and the training that I think I need. And so I want to talk a little bit about that, because there's so much more. You talked about understanding value, right? Like, and that there's this essence of, like, at what point do we lean on training and certification and education and versus relying on experience and the learning that we do outside of the classroom?
Yeah, I think that oftentimes depends on the people you're trying to communicate, right? So in some fields, if you don't have that piece of paper, then you don't know how to do the thing. And others are more open to non-traditional forms of learning, like teaching yourself something. I've got a lot of that in my background, teaching myself how to do things. So I really think that we've been told that you should first try to get the piece of paper without trying to lean on your experiences. But I don't necessarily think that is always the case. I think that, you know, the right person will hire in you know, thinking in terms of jobs, hire or promote the person that shows they have the experience over somebody that just has another certificate. If you have the certificate and can show you're also doing it in real life, then that's good too. But yeah.
Sorry. Louise has somewhere very important to be.
She has a
huge. I don't know if that answered your question, Louise.
Well, yeah, I think we do get kind of tripped up in that, in a little bit of that kind of like that educational churn. And what I heard you say was really like, let's just stop and understand what your real gap is. Is your real gap an education gap and a skill gap? Or is your gap an on the job, like that you're missing a piece there? And that they are actually very different. The experience that we have, just going back to Kim's example, like I was so engaged in my schooling with my professor that I was like, yeah, this is it. And when we miss that other, like the application piece and the experiential piece, we really do, there really is a disconnect. There is both, there's a balance, but it's, don't confuse them. They are different.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, because I have the terminal degree, I've had a lot of people say, well, I'm thinking about going back for a master's. And my first question is always, what are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the goal? How is it going to help you? What is it going to give you to get to whatever your next step is? And half, maybe even 60% of the time, the answer is, oh, I don't know. I was just going to go back because I don't know what else to do next. So I think I agree. I think sometimes it's used as a crutch because, I mean, when I was a kid, that's what I was told. You go mm-hmm. to college and you get a good job and then, you know, as a turning 40 someone, that it turned out not to be the case for a lot of us. And so what's the next solution? Oh, go get another one to then get a better job. So I can see how that's, you know, sort of what we've been conditioned to lean on when we're not sure what the next step might be.
Well, I think there's a little bit of taking responsibility in there, right? Because we end up consuming. We end up consuming other people's knowledge. That's, and when we go to learn something, we're consuming somebody else's knowledge. And by spending all that time consuming and not creating, not being in that space of what do I want to create? How do I want to create that? What do I want to tap into from my wealth of knowledge already? And right, we were talking about finding those gaps, finding those places of, I don't need an entire master's degree. I don't, right? I mean, I have my JD. I was practicing attorney. And there are so many times up until about 10 years ago that I was like, I should get another degree. I should get it. And what I realized, it was that question of, but why do I need this? I don't need this to do. What am I interested in doing? Do I need additional education? And I will tell you, for those of you listening, go get yourself a JD because people think you can do anything when you say you are a practicing attorney. It's fascinating the type of jobs that I, after getting my law degree, when I left the practice of law, the number of people who invited me into all sorts of circles that I was like, I don't know how to do that. But they thought that I could because I had this degree. So it opens, like, yes, educational pieces of paper can sometimes open doors. And I think we have a responsibility to stop consuming for the sake of consuming and start creating opportunities for ourselves and for those that we are working with for and who work for us. That's where I think about that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think part of it's also determining what of the things that you consumed is worth bringing along for the rest of your ride, right? That's why it's a tornado. Like, yes. I only was pulling in the things that serve me and the purpose and values that I have, and leaving everything else behind. And sometimes that did, and sometimes that didn't involve higher education. So the book that was just published, a lot of it is, you know, because there's a whole chapter on this is what everybody else did, because that's a requirement for academic publishing. Mm-hmm. But I have a co-author, and we went very practical. And it was all based on combined, her and I have 40 years of teaching experience online, and it was all based on that. Mm-hmm. So it's very, you know, leans very accessibility standpoint, and remembering who your online students are, but also very things you can literally take and go use, because that's what our experience was in.
Well, isn't that our, speaking of responsibility, like, isn't that our responsibility if we do want to shift paradigms, if we do want to dismantle certain systems that don't work for the majority? Don't we need to start giving voice to this place of, yeah, okay, I need to kind of play along to do this, but I'm going to be really clear that I'm playing along to do that because here's the bigger message.
Right. Absolutely. My next step is actually taking not everything that's in there, but taking the gist of that and flipping my audience to the rest of the world. Nobody wants to read it if you're not in teaching, right? There's a lot of teacher jargon in there, and, you know, because that's who the intended audience is. But I think there's a lot in there that is applicable to any kind of training and learning design. And that's why, you know, when I left, as someone with a background in writing and words, what I called myself was incredibly important to me. Mm-hmm. And so I landed on learning designer because that is encompassing a lot of different contexts where the core of what you're trying to do is the same, right? The core of learning something is change. And ideally you have an understanding of what you want that change to be. But to me, that was an important piece of pivoting for me.
Yeah. I'd hazard a guess that most people don't know that that's the core of learning. I mean, people like think of the number of workshops and trainings and lessons and this and that and the other thing that people are putting out there. I don't think people create from a space of what change am I looking to provide? Like, and that is the core of curriculum development. And yet, my guess is most people don't think of that.
But that's also the core of why people go to formal education or for informal education, or they pick up a book because they think that's going to be the answer. It's because there's something that they're trying to change in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Well, and I think, right, I think that's where, in again, this is just my opinion, I think that that's where the gap, a huge gap is.
Oh, yeah.
Is that those that are creating the curriculum are not necessarily creating it to elicit change. And those that are consuming it are craving change.
Right.
Or are told that they have to go to it because their boss told them to go to it. But
exactly.
We're going to.
That's true too.
Yeah.
Having completed a cybersecurity training this morning.
There you go.
So if we were to look at empowering our listeners around becoming their own learning designers for their own, their textbook, like who they are, their own court, like, right, like their lives, their, what advice or tips do you have, Katrina, that can help people really kind of embrace that to become their own designers of their own learning?
So we started this session talking about the value of reflection, Louise. And I honestly think there are studies that I'll like constantly wave my hand at those studies. But I mean, that show that thinking about how you're thinking, and especially in terms of learning, goes a really long way in helping you focus on what your goals are and what you need to achieve those goals. Whether that's when you're already in a course or when you're trying to plan out what it is you want to learn and how, reflection can help you figure out what's my goal? What do I want to learn? What change do I need? How do I best learn? That's a whole other conversation, right? About understanding the ways that you want and need to both consume, but also apply the information that you're learning. That depends on the person and your educational baggage that you're pulling along with you. So I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Oh, it sure does. It's like, really, like, let's just pause for a moment and open your suitcase and understand what it is that you're bringing to that. Understand, like, if you are struggling in a certain modality or learning a certain way, there are other options out there for you. It doesn't mean that you can't pursue that. It's understanding a lot about you, that self-reflection piece and that self-awareness piece, but also recognize there are a great many ways to get that learning and to get that information that you need out there and to find that way that works for you. And then let's use it, right? Let's not just learn for the sake of learning. Let's figure out how do we use that? How we take what we have learned to actually make a change, to actually implement something different.
Right. You talked about thinking about thinking, right? That is the essence of reflection, is thinking about thinking. And it was so funny because when you said those words, I had a visceral reaction. Because it was interesting. I was, as I unpacked it just a little bit in real time, it's this, I was taught, even though, so my family is definitely, I come from a family of advanced degree holders. Like, you go to college, but not just to get an undergrad, you go to college to get multiple degrees and you write your suitcases filled with them. And so the fact that I only had 2 degrees was like, I was the underachiever apparently. But the idea of thinking about thinking was drilled into me that was navel gazing, right? That was not something that was productive. And yet I obviously have grown to know that that's not true. And this idea of thinking about thinking and thinking about how we learn and thinking about how we're stepping into something and the importance of it and how it's going to play out for us, I think is scary for people because it doesn't feel productive. And I wanted to underline that because even though I know it not to be true, I still have a visceral reaction when I think of this unproductive thinking about thinking. It was just really interesting. I just wanted to kind of put that in there because it is. I mean, I everything that was shared here is this idea of stepping back and understanding ourselves more deeply. And I would love to know, for those that write themselves off of not being a good learner, of not being a strong learner, of learning is hard for me, do you have any ways to help them think about the way that they learn that could make this easier for them?
Yeah. I mean, no matter how many people say that I'm not a good learner or I'm not a good test taker, that's always my favorite. Thinking about it's not necessarily you. I mean, having been in a lot of terrible courses, sometimes it's the course is not designed for you. You were not kept in mind when that course was designed. But I think a good first step is thinking about all the things you do know. What do you know? And how did you actually come to learn that thing? And that, I think, will show you a lot about how you learn, because you'll start to see themes and patterns in the ways that you've learned the things you feel like you know really, really well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great tip, because it is, we all know things. We all have our own brilliance. We all have our own wisdom and our own knowing. And stopping and saying, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah.
Where did I get that?
When I pivoted, I was so burnt out that I everyone's like, oh, do something you love. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. And so I made myself a table, and that table had all the things I know that I'm good at. Like, that was easy. I'm good at a lot of stuff. I had a column for how I came to know that thing, or how I came to be good at that thing. And then I had a column that where I rated on a scale of 1 to 10, how much I actually liked it. Like, mm-hmm. just because I'm good at a thing doesn't mean that I actually like it. But that middle column, I wasn't expecting it to be so valuable outside of my resume, right? I was expecting that to be something that I would pull more into my resume, but I find that it was actually really, has been very valuable in having conversations like these and explaining to people the value of learning design and understanding learning, because that's a big hurdle outside of formal education. But I, you know, start from what you're good at.
Yeah. I love that. I do this exercise often with my clients, right? As understanding, like, you're understanding your skill set, understanding what you have in your toolbox. And just because you have something in your toolbox doesn't mean you have to like using it. Like, you don't have to do just the things you're good at. There can be things that you're not good at yet that you would love to have in your toolbox. And that exercise really helps people kind of understand. It's like, yeah, I do have all of these skills, and there are some things that I would just rather not ever do again. And so it helps with that self-awareness. It helps with that. I do not have a column, but I will, around how did I learn that thing? How did I get to be so good at that? What did that look like? What did that take? What did that feel like? Was it a struggle or was it easy? All of those things, I think, is valuable information. And that can really help you shape what it is you pick up and what it is you leave behind when you're looking at your baggage, at your luggage.
Yeah. I don't know if, Louise, I think you've read, and I don't know, Katrina, if you have, The Big Leap by Gay Harden. Not Gay, that's an actress. Gay Hendricks. God, the last names are so similar. Okay, Gay Hendricks, not an actor, a writer, wrote this book called The Big Leap. And it talks about our zones of genius, and it's our zone of incompetence, zone of competence, zone of excellence, and zone of genius. And when I realized, when I started doing these exercises and realized how much of my time was spent in my zone of excellence, which was all those things that I was really good at, but then in those columns would have ticked off, I really hate doing this, right? It's just like what I loved learning about, all of a sudden I hated practicing. So ticking off all of those things in the zone of excellence, where you get a lot of ego hits because people really, really, they're like, hey, you're really good at this, and it feels good, so you're following it. It's also a absolute recipe for burnout because you're not aligned with it. And so allowing yourself to be in that place that you're talking about, that using those columns to help you find that zone of genius, I think is a wonderful tool. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. I just noticed the time. And wow, that time went fast. That was a really amazing conversation. I would love to know, in the context of what we're hoping that people walk away from with this conversation, what are those golden nuggets that we're hoping that they put in their pockets and take with them?
I find it's these three questions, I think, that I actually wrote down around understanding how we learn ourselves, understanding what we learn, what do we want to learn, or what have we learned in the past, and then why have we learned it, or why do we want to learn it? And I think those are those three questions. I don't know if they're three nuggets, but those are the three questions that stand out to me to think about, like, how do I take what I know and move forward, especially in a career pivot, especially when we feel so lost and hopeless and untethered. I think those three questions would be really, really valuable.
I love those. Katrina, how about for you?
I think, in addition to what Louise said, that the idea that if you are in a learning situation, that you can demand transparency and value articulation from whomever you're going to. And if they're worth a damn, they're going to be able to tell you. But that is something that that as a learner, you should be able to ask for if it's not already articulated, because I think too often, I rarely see it actually happen. And so too often it doesn't happen. But as a learner, if you're not sure why you're being asked to do something, then you have the right to know.
Hmm. Self-advocacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge. I'm going to go back to that thinking about thinking and that place of reflection where we started, and really it is absolutely one of the most productive things. And I think it speaks to that self-advocacy part plus those three questions. So it's like tying it all together, maybe, is this place of allowing yourself to think about how you learn, what you learn, why you're learning, and then what you need from the people who are providing that learning to you. And if you're on the flip side, if you're providing that learning to others, going through that same process in terms of what is it that you're providing? What is the change that you're wanting to actually elicit?
So. I love that. Ooh,
good stuff. Good stuff. Katrina, where can people find you in the world if they want to continue the conversation with you?
Well, if you go to my website, you can find all my socials there. It's cmlearningdesign.com. I think I'm probably most active on LinkedIn. So that's probably the best place when you get there.
Great. And we will include all those links in the show notes as well. Awesome. Louise, where can people find us if they want to continue talking to us?
Absolutely on LinkedIn. Kim and I are both there, and your kick-ass career is also there somewhere on LinkedIn, but connect with us personally because that's way easier. But you can also find us at yourkickasscareer.com, and you can tune in and check out, like, we have an events tab and all kinds of things going on there. So please do. And coming up next week, I believe, our next little micro class that Kim and I have put together for micro learnings for macro results. How do we take what we learn in small little bits and then apply it to, right? Just all the things we're talking about. We're going to be talking about moments of joy and micro moments of joy and what that looks like and why does that matter and how do we learn it and why do we want to learn it? And well, now you know what. Those were all my questions. Those are my nuggets. I love it. You can also tune in next week with Engineering Resilience, where Hannah Burns Dunham is going to be joining us to have another great conversation here on Your Kick-Ass Career Conversations.
Thank you, Louise. And thank you, Katrina, again, for being here with us. This was, it was an illuminating conversation. And I really appreciate you bringing your brilliance to the table and helping people figure out how and why they're learning what they're learning in the world.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Katrina.
Bye, everyone.
Take care. Bye.